Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small caps. So, big welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Hello, everyone. Great to be back.
Yeah, well, the markets are definitely reaching a bit of a crescendo at the moment. Mm. We've just heard that Nvidia has passed $5 trillion market cap. We've got five of the Mag 7 stocks reporting in the next 48 hours. Plus, we've got the Federal Reserve decision tonight after the bell. And we've got a big trade deal negotiations between Trump and President Xi out in Asia tomorrow. But before I run through what that means for the markets and for your particular stocks, have you been buying or selling anything over the past couple of weeks?
Nothing significant. I might have tinkered around, I can't remember, but nothing significant. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm actually quite bullish at the moment. I think small caps to a certain extent have been left behind, but there's definitely felt like there's more interest in small caps coming back again in the last 2 or 3 weeks. Maybe everybody I'm talking to saying, oh, actually markets, you've got, obvious still standout areas of value in some smaller mid caps. Yeah, I think same as before, REITs are very, very cheap. There's all sorts of pockets of opportunity, I think, in small and mid caps. We're not buying, as one of my readers said, we're not buying the whole market. We're cherry picking where we see value, and I'm still seeing plenty of it. And I'm reasonably upbeat on the macro picture. I mean, the US economy should be roaring, shouldn't it? Given that you've got this AI boom, huge investment needed in infrastructure and power generation. I saw BlackRock and Blackstone both saying there's going to be a crisis because they're not generating enough electricity in America and other countries to power this AI boom, which all means more investment, more economic growth. I think the future's bright. I really do. And the tariff stuff is maybe, I mean, certainly the market is looking at it and saying it's a glitch, isn't it? And they always do deals in the end. So, yeah, I'm actually feeling more bullish than the last couple of weeks. Yeah, how about you, Paul?
Yeah, well, I've actually just started a toehold position in MJ Gleeson, the UK house builder.
Oh, yeah, good choice. Mm.
And the reason basically is because over the last couple of weeks, as you probably know, the yields on gilts have actually come down, the 10-year and the 30-year, which actually has meant mortgage rates similarly have also fallen. And so the affordability matrix is getting better. And I think I put a toehold position before the budget, because I actually think the budget was likely to be better for house builders than what the market is currently pricing in, simply because Rachel Reeves got to actually get the house building market working, the new build, etc. And then the other thing I quite liked about MJ Gleeson, because one, it's in affordable houses, i.e. such that, cheaper houses, which is where they want to be politically. Plus, it's got a sort of like a low cladding issue. It's only got provisions of about $11 or $12 million, because it never made the big the big blocks of flats. It always does two to three. So it hasn't got that exposure. And the big problem at the moment is actually the blockage in the building safety regulator. And if the buildings, just for everybody else, the building safety regulator is only there to deal with blocks of flats above 7 stories or 18 meters. And therefore it doesn't do those. So it isn't actually being impacted too much. And the sort of the board want to actually, increase. They think they can increase profits by triple profits over the medium term, because they currently do about 1,700 houses build each year, completions, and they're looking to go to 3,000 under the new regime. And if they get anywhere near that, the market will do really well. The shares are trading at about a 30% discount to net tangible assets. I just thought it was I was hesitant to go ahead with a house builder before the budget, but I actually think there's too much bad news, and I'm happy to go in with a toehold position ahead of it.
I do know. I think that's brilliant. I totally agree with all of that. I haven't taken any positions myself in house builders yet, but we have been saying for several weeks now in my Substack that we think that it's a good opportunity at the moment, because everyone's terrified about this budget. But as you say, she's not going to clobber house builders. Famous last words. She might do, but I think it's very unlikely. So I think you're right. Everybody's sitting on the sidelines waiting to get more comfortable for buying these things. But the early bird catches the worm. When you take a little bit of risk like you've done, I think that's a great call, Paul. Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said.
Okay, well, we've got masses of questions coming in. We've got Emma. Let's start with the iDocs, which is basically a software company that does sort of like document management and project management software for the government, public sector, and for corporates, etc. Hasn't really done much for since been listed, and then got a bid. It got a bid this week from one of its largest investors, Longpath. At 71.5p. Emma's asking, given the track record of agreed bids, i.e. look at Treat, what should people do? What would you do in this situation if you're a shareholder of iDocs, with this bid, with the current share price, and it's obviously jumped, would you stick and wait, or would you basically sell in the market?
Oh, I see. Yes. That's an interesting angle on it. I mean, obviously, we can't give advice. I mean, it's down to the individual. I like the thing they said on Stockopedia a while back, which they did an analysis of this. They said, if in doubt, just sell half. You know, it's not a binary decision. I think that's a good idea. And I think it also rests on how good the actual underlying company is itself. And in the case of iDoc and how generous the bid is, I think this is an extremely generous bid. It values iDocs at 21 times EV over EBITDA, which I mean is, I think, for what has been, as you rightly say, a very lackluster business, multi-year kind of, it's done lots of acquisitions which haven't really shown any particular benefit. I think I'd bite their hand off if it was me. I really would. Yeah. I think this is a lucky exit from a disappointing company. So yeah, for me, if it was me, I'd grab the money and run.
Yeah, that is actually trailing multiples. It isn't what the forecasts are. If you look at actually the forecasts.
Oh, are they going to be much different though?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're
rough. Oh, okay.
It isn't, you know, sort of like dead cheap. It's about 3.5 times sales and about 27 times forward PE. So, you know, it's not.
Well, that's a generous bid for a poorly performing company, I would suggest. But in your crazy world of price to sales ratios and things, it might not be expensive.
Yeah, I personally, if I held them, which I don't, but if I did hold them, I would actually wait out. Actually, because
why?
Yeah, I would wait. I would basically. I think there's a chance that if somebody could take this one out at a higher price, but it's a small chance. It's a small chance, but anyway. But that's how I would play it.
But you've also got to weigh up, Paul, the chance of the bid falling through, as we've seen with some other ones. So it's difficult balancing them, isn't it? So maybe it's a sell half job.
Yeah, could well be. Okay, good. We've got a keen-eyed investor, Tony. He's saying, what's happened to MPAC shares over the past 3 or 4 days? They've gone up nearly a pound.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, they're still not expensive. I think I was just running the numbers. I mean, look, I think they're still trading at around about 11.5 times PE. But what's your thoughts on this one?
Well, I think possibly you and I, and definitely me and my team on my Substack, were flagging this actually at around £3, just saying, look, actually risk reward on this now might be turning round. So I like it. I actually think this, I missed the boat myself. My colleague John did buy some. He caught the bottom. The bull case on it that I've heard, and I think this is quite sensible actually, is that once the tariff uncertainty unwinds, they could win, you know, there could be a backlog of large lumpy orders in the US for new production lines due to onshoring. So that, I think, is the opportunity. Having said that, I think the big move from £2.80 up to nearly £4, it's come off a little today. for me, that's kind of ruled it out as a short-term trade. You know, I missed the bottom, so I personally wouldn't be buying it now. But I do think there's quite a credible bull case. But you offset that with the fact they geared up right at the wrong point in the cycle, and they're certainly not out of the woods in terms of trading yet. So you've got to weigh those things up. But it's been a nice little trade there. But don't you think at the moment we seem to get violent rebounds, and then people just immediately start selling into it? So we're seeing this pattern play out where sometimes just grabbing the 20 or 30% gain might be the best thing to do in the short term. But yeah. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, in terms of when it could be a takeout target, I think it can be, definitely, because it's got rid of the pension deficit now. It's basically a standalone business, got good technology in automation. It's in a hot, definitely in a good space long term. Plus, you've got that big, beautiful tax bill benefit coming through for American manufacturers to encourage new plant and equipment. So it's definitely got secular tailwinds. However, there was a direct to buy about a week ago. So I would say that in an imminently a takeover is unlikely, because wouldn't have been allowed to buy. So it's unlikely to be an actual acquisition, that spike. And then you look at it sort of like, has it been tipped anywhere by a big, you know, a big investor like yourself, for instance? And the answer to that is no.
I think it's more Cockney Rebel who moves prices than me.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it has been tipped in the last week, you know, specifically. So that says to me there's some good news coming through at some point in time. There may well be, you know, a good announcement. It doesn't move. This business, I've not seen something move as fast as that northwards on a quality business like this. But I could be wrong. It could just be that there was somebody's tipping it and just decided to get a big position, and there's no liquidity in it. It has spiked up. But
yeah, I was going to say, I think it's more about liquidity on this type of things. Yeah. And a lot of people are trading in and out of shares generally. And if you look at I've just called up the trade list here for MPAC. It's only one or two trades each day.
Really?
Oh, no. Sorry, that's the prices. I've clicked on the wrong flipping thing. I thought that seemed odd. No, scrub that. That was absolute codswallop. I've got the trades up now. It's a lot more than that, but it's not the most liquid of things. And I think you've got lots of traders watching these shares. Everybody's waiting for the low point, and then everyone steams in at once. So I wouldn't read too much into a price going up 20-25%, because I'm seeing that all the time. Every day something's shooting up a lot, and then they usually sell off again afterwards. So I think it's a kind of stampeding herd of traders who dive into these things, and then they go straight back out again. So I think let's let the dust settle and see where it ends up. But I think as trades go, I think this one is quite interesting.
Okay, good. Let's move on. We've got some building products. We've got a number of people asking about this one. It's got Steve Waters and also another guy called Guy, in fact. Both Alumas building products and building envelope and drainage type products. They've had a very, very good history, but they came out with a softer sort of trading update just recently, or results, I think. The shares have come down. And I guess the question is, this is a buying opportunity, actually. I think the shares now are trading at about 9x PE for a quite high-quality business. What's your thought?
Yeah, it's buying opportunity, definitely. I don't hold any myself, and I'm not intending to buy any because I don't have any spare cash. But yeah, the update, well, they're a bit naughty. They put out a sort of woolly worded outlook that was sort of sounded cautious, but then slipped out a 6% downgrade to forecast through the broker. And we hate that. You know, if you're going to lower your forecast, you need to specifically say it. I've got a new thing that I call the naughty step, where I keep a list. I keep a list of companies that do this, because I think we've got to name and shame them to stop them doing it. You know, that was a minor glitch. It wasn't, you know, this is not. Yes, it was a mild profit warning through the broker, because macro's tough. You know, nobody should be surprised when companies put out a minor profit warning. But you see, it peaked. Peaked in June this year at nearly £4, and it's now £2.67. That's crackers. It's definitely oversold, I think. A real quality business. Yeah, so I think this is a buying opportunity potentially.
Yeah. I would say, you know, with CEOs and CFOs are probably not quaking in their boots about being on your being on your naughty step there, Paul, to be honest. And I would say,
fair enough.
Okay, I would say, you know, it's not a surprise. We all know the housing market, the building products industry, yes, slowed up heading into the budget. Everyone said it. So I would say this is, you know, this is you'd expect this to have happened.
You would.
And yeah, on that basis, if it bounced back after the budget, I think this actually falls into the same camp as when I explained with Gleeson's. Actually, it's good, solid quality business trading at a good price, and if you've got a long term time horizon, then actually you might find you've got some decent news coming on the 26th of November when Rachel Reeve gets up. But that'd be my take.
No, I agree completely. And I think the market's ridiculously short-termist. Mm. You know, people seem to think they've got to react to every little bit of news or macro and whatever. And these huge swings in share price, you're not buying this year's earnings. You're buying all the earnings for the rest of time, you know. And, okay, you discount them the further out they are. But I think this is just a big opportunity in a illiquid and sometimes quite irrational and very short-term focused market. I think traders can do really well in this market, actually, by taking advantage of things like this.
Yeah. In the same context, we've got Paul the Parrot. He's asking about Bioventix, which is basically a sheep antibody, monoclonal antibody firm that uses it for diagnostics in healthcare, particularly for, is it vitamin D? And then they've got this one for Alzheimer's they're trying to develop as well as a blood-based test. The shares have been a ski slope over the past 12 months. What's your view? Is this a buying opportunity or is this a bit of a value trap?
It's a much more complex situation. So I've got, this is in my don't know tray. I've followed it for donkey's years since it moved from plus markets to AIM, I think it was, wasn't it? And major, major multibagger. But as you can see, it's really come off the boil. The value metrics now look very good. Forward PE of 13.5, dividend yield of 8%. And you've got a sort of capital light business model, but you've got to really get into the weeds on this one. It's a difficult share to analyze. Some friends of mine have followed it closely for donkey's years, and they really, you know, they get right into the individual product lines. And the main issue seems to be that there are problems with the Chinese who are now mandating cheaper products and chipping away at Bioventix's lead on this, whereas I think before they were just sort of passive customers who paid up, and it's very high margin stuff with a long tail of earnings. So it's difficult to analyze, but certainly so you've got to essentially work out what the competitive threat is. Have they had the good years, or, you know, and new products in the pipeline take several years to build, and then you've got to guess what the royalties will be from them. So it's a bit too specialized for me, but just on my basic overview level, the metrics, the value metrics are looking good. So definitely want to have a closer look at, I would suggest.
Yeah. I mean, I have a slightly different view, actually, because they've got a team of about 15 people competing against huge diagnostic businesses, you know, like Roche and Abbott Laboratories and people like that. I mean, they've got thousands and AI, you know, thousands of people, lab technicians and AI and stuff. Now, it seemed to me this one seems to be hanging the hat on, you know, for the stale bulls on this Alzheimer's diagnostic, the blood-based one. Okay, now. Mm. I actually know the FDA has already approved an Alzheimer's diagnostic, which was done in May. It's a company called Fuji Rebio, which is basically, I think it's a Japanese business. And so they're late to the market on this one, even if they do manage to get FDA approval. So I would say, you know, if you're looking at what price action could be, I think the chances of them making a success of their Alzheimer's diagnostic is probably less than 50%. And if I'm right, then the stale bulls will become very stale bulls when that actual news happens, because that's their big last hope. I actually think this is a value trap.
Interesting.
It smells all the way. Even though, unless they pull another rabbit, you know, it's like another rabbit out of a hat, and they can manage to say there's another product going well, because I think the Alzheimer's diagnostic is too late, actually.
Right. So what we're both saying in different ways is it's all about competition, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. And
I think you need basically a view on that Alzheimer's diagnostic, because that's where most people put in the value, I think.
Okay, interesting.
My take. Okay, good. Let's move to another one. We came out with an inline statement, but the shares went up. We've got Phillies asking about Auction Technologies, which is sort of a networking business that basically has got technology that joins buyers to all the auction houses, and then made quite a large acquisition. I think it was called Chairs something or other, which did listing of sort of collectibles and antiques and stuff rather than actually auctions. But anyway, what's your take on Auction Tech? The shares bounced a bit, but have come down a bit today, actually.
Oh, have they? Yeah, it was up 9% yesterday when we looked at it mid-morning. My colleague John wrote up a section on this in yesterday's report. we've historically been sceptical about auction technology because, there's a lot of competition. There's downward pressure on pricing. And it kind of was floated growth stock, on a toppy rating, and it's derated big time to a point where actually now at around £3.40, what it was yesterday, we think it's maybe worth a fresh look. Actually, it seems to be shoring up the margins. And it said the full year will be in line with revised expectations, but I think it warned on profits earlier this year. Our main, so we think it's kind of looking okay now. But you've got a horrible balance sheet, and they took on a lot of debt for this chair something or other acquisition, or when they were already heavily indebted. So it's really our main concern is the balance sheet. We think they've overgeared it, and it again is a competitive market, but doesn't look expensive anymore. So I don't know. I wouldn't. It's in our don't know tray, but on value basis it's better than it was anyway. So I think you liked this a year or so ago, didn't
you? I definitely liked it. The acquisition it made was Chairish, it actually is called
Chairish.
Yeah, now what I liked about it, I thought it was unique technology that effectively linked all the auction houses to buyers, and that was their USP, that was their moat. And now for them to buy basically a listings platform for collectibles and antiques. They don't do anything. That's no different to just a normal retail outlet and stuff. And I was just thinking, crikey, maybe that moat isn't as big as I thought it was. And they're having to basically go to areas that is, to get growth, they feel as though they need to go into a listing type business, which is not more than a shop, basically, an eBay.
Yeah.
I it's blown my investment thesis in terms of the secular growth drivers. I think this is an eBay lookalike, actually, but I thought they had much better IPR in the type of products, the uniqueness of it. And I think probably what you'll find is if you go on this, go on their site, you'll probably find, a limited edition of Harry Potter available sort of like 10,000 times. I don't know, how limited. So what I'm trying to say is that actually it's a shop window. It's not what I thought it was, curated products that are really quite different and unique. You can't get them anywhere else. I think you can, actually.
That's interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, looking at the metrics, it's on a forward PE of only 12.3 times, but you have got a lot of debt, and I don't think it pays divvies. There's no divvies on this. So it's kind of one of these struggling things that's trying to look and sound like a tech company, but the market's kind of seen through it, I think. So that ties in with what you've just said. So,
good. Okay, right. We've got Sarah. She's asking about RWS, the sort of like technology translation business that sort of helps people translate across multiple languages from like websites and patents and technical journals, plus regulatory documents and stuff. Came out with a trading update or results this week.
That's right. I looked at this in yesterday's report. I did a section on it myself, actually. It was a trading update for September 2025. Again, this was another one that was over PR'd. They said it's within the guidance range. Mm. Actually, it was bang on the bottom end of the guidance range, 60 to 70 million, and they reported 60 million. So you wonder how many provisions the CFOs released to make sure it wasn't 58 or 57 or whatever. So that's me being sceptical. But they can't explain what the business does. It's just ridiculous management speak gobbledygook. The strategy, I think, is pure waffle. We've had this for months now under this new CEO, and they're saying they'll give us guidance and targets with the full year results. So when's that going to be? Probably in December, isn't it? I think you've got a 13.5% dividend yield, so no way is that going to be sustained, in my opinion. Yeah. But the balance sheet's not too bad. The balance sheet's almost debt-free, so I suspect you'd probably have a rebasing of the dividend, maybe at half the current level going forward. That's my guess. Over to you, really, because the big question here is AI. They're obviously under pressure. The forecasts are just relentlessly reducing, which tells me they're under pressure, aren't they? So over to you, Paul. Tell us about AI.
I think they're going to slightly benefit with their AI, you know, sort of like training software and applications, which basically, I believe, help the large language models convert their effectively their training material across multiple languages. So it's to help the large language models train across multiple languages so they can actually adopt it. However, that isn't making any major inroads into the top line compared to what's been, you know, going the other way. Hence, they're slightly negative on a like-for-like basis on the sales. So they're going to get some benefit, but actually I think the headwind, which will get increasingly more so, because as the large language models can do this themselves anyway, once you've trained them, then I actually think you're going to get less of the former and you're going to get more of the latter, i.e. they start cannibalizing your business. So I hate to say it, albeit very, very cheap, and the numbers, I think the numbers are lying again. I think this is a value trap.
I'm leaning that way myself, I must admit. I know nothing about AI, but somebody told me that this sort of business, apparently you can just chuck it all through AI language models. It'll spew out something that's pretty good, but still needs checking by a human. So you can, by an expert to dot the I's and cross the T's, but that the overall cost of doing that is much lower. The clients know that and so want a much lower price. I mean, does that tie in with your thinking?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think most of the lower level translation services, the non-patents and stuff like that, is going to be, and they're using AI to do it themselves, but because it's going to get better and better. I mean, if everybody's got, you know, effectively AI models to be able to do it, then the price is zero, isn't it? Near enough. And that just means that a big part of your addressable market, your added value, has disappeared. I think it's just basically, to me, I would love to be proved wrong, but I think this is a value trap.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you. I think I'm keeping my distance from it. So we'll see what happens.
Yep. Okay, good. We've got Rebecca. She's asking about Centaur Media, which I think came out with, was it basically a statement that it was going to give cash back to shareholders? She's asking what's your latest view on it. I know Richard Staveley and the Harwood crew are really all over this and have been pushing the management team to realise value, which they seem to have done very well.
They do. Yeah. Funnily enough, Rebecca messaged me this morning and said, Paul, there's this announcement. Have a look at it, because it didn't come on the usual 7 a.m. thing. Yeah. It came a bit later. So, yeah, she's right. So I did have a look at it. They're going to do a tender offer before the end of this year. So you've only got sort of maybe less than 2 months to wait at 48p, I think. And the shares are 44p in the market. So they're going to essentially give away nearly all the cash, but it will leave there's two interesting things here. So you've got a short-term profit to be had from the current share price, which within 2 months you could annualize that and probably be an okay return. But you've also then got the question of what the rump of the company is worth, because the way the figure I had was 71 million cash after the last disposals, and they're going to give away 64 million in the tender offer. So it looks like there'll be some cash remaining in the rump. I think they've got a couple of little businesses that are not worth very much, and maybe 7 million cash. And they did use the word initially returned 64 million pounds today. So that says to me there could be a sort of a nice kicker on this with another smaller capital return maybe in 2026. So for special situations investors, this one looks quite interesting, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say once they're given the tender offer out, What's the point of it being listed? It's going to be it's going to be taken private, isn't it? They're going to take it off the market, I'd have thought.
Or pivot to doing something, or give most of the cash back, the seven million, and then pivot to doing something in AI and be a 100 bagger.
Or alternatively, become a Bitcoin treasury.
Yes.
That's the other one, isn't it? I know, yeah. Okay, good. What we got? Plenty of questions on stuff coming through. Let's move to Ingenta. Tom's asking about Ingenta, which I think is a sort of like a royalties Ingenta. Management type of product. It's quite illiquid. We hardly
What's the
ever
ticker,
look at
Paul?
It. ING is the ticker. It's quite illiquid.
It's a software company, is it?
I think it's a royalties management type software business. So it effectively allows people to, you know, if they've got that allows them to manage their royalties and stuff, licensing and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I found it. Yeah, I did have some of these briefly actually last year or this year. We like it. We think it's good. We haven't had any information recently that I've seen, but the H1 results were out on 15th of September, and it's only very small, 13 million market cap. We gave it a green, a 5 out of 5 score, on the basis that you got a very strong balance sheet. About a third of the market cap is net cash. You're getting a 6% plus dividend yield and a PE of only about 7. But of course, because of the small size, you're going to have a wide spread, aren't you, and a big bid offer. I think the results were better than expected as well, actually. The H1 results, earnings per share was up 38%, so not bad. This is the one where they're having to, it's coming back to me now, they're having to take on a new sales team and sort of rebuild new business, because I think they got kind of stagnant legacy type business that was withering away. But it looks as if it's actually working, because they're talking about the new sales team now delivering results on a strong pipeline. So cautiously confident, they said, in line. Potentially interesting, but very small and illiquid. It would be my summary. So do you know it, Paul?
I think it's a high quality company. You're right, it's illiquid. I think it's been tipped, hasn't it, in the last week. I mean, the shares have rocketed from about 72p to 93p.
In the
last week, which says that somebody's trying to accumulate the shares. I don't. You'd have to investigate to see.
Or they're trying to ramp it so they can sell their shares.
true. Okay, good. We've got Steve Lewis. He's asking about Light Science Technologies, which I believe has got three divisions. It's got this unique sort of like cladding foam that it sprays on buildings to stop fires, and therefore you cannot have to take the cladding off. It's sort of like a fire, which is very sort of like early stage. I think it's been trialed by Vinci, I think, one of the big building contractors. And then it's got these light, its core, which is its light science, which is growing vegetables and flowers and vertically and stuff. It's a mixed bag anyway. And it's got contract electronics as well. Anyway, what's your sort of view on Light Sciences Technologies?
It's a bit too early stage for me at this point, but I think it does sound interesting. Lawrence Hulse from Onward Opportunities was briefing about this, I think, in his conversation with you. And he really likes the cladding foam remediation things. It means you don't have to take all the cladding off. And that could be very good. Now, the most recent news is on the ag tech thing. They've won I think it was just under £500,000 order from Nottingham Trent University to do a setup for this vertical farming business, you know, where you have, rather than putting things in the ground, you have these vertical arrays, you know, and special lights, and you just feed them chemicals and nitrogen, I suppose, and things like that. And you can get a lot more throughput, output food from any amount of space. So it's a very interesting area for the future. And I think the fact that they've won a nearly £500,000 contract from a university research department, I think that actually quite helps validate it. They talk about, I think, for the vertical farming thing, a pipeline, I think they said 45 million, which sounds an awful lot. They're going to have competition, of course. There must be any number of other companies doing this, but I think it's quite interesting, Light Science. Not for me personally, it's all a little bit too early stage, and I'm not madly keen on blue sky projects, because they tend to get overvalued on hype, and then they need repeat fundraisers. But I think this thing is actually, I think it's not burning as much cash as you would expect.
No pun intended.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I mean, here we are. The H1 results, it was only a very small loss before tax of 160 grand. So that this could be worth a closer look. But 20 million market cap is very difficult to substantiate. You can't substantiate it really on what they've achieved so far. So it is a bit of a story stock, but you get three stories for the price of one. So that's quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, I mean, my take on it, okay, I'm a bit sceptical, but this cladding thing, the foam you put, okay, the idea is that they squirt this foam in between the wall cavity and the cladding. Yeah. And then, and therefore, it's a barrier that stops if the cladding ever comes gets on fire, then it'll stop
it. It expands, it actually, doesn't it?
It expands and put the fire out or stop it or somehow like that. Now, if you are somebody who lives in that building, okay, do you want to absolutely, you know, if, and you've got cladding everywhere, which is basically not fire retardant, it's going to increase the fires. Do you want basically somebody to put this foam in? And rely on their work to be able to stop but because you're not moving the bomb essentially, which is still next to you. What you're doing is stopping the igniting. I would personally, for just peace of mind, I would insist on the cladding going because it's too dangerous. You know, this thing could deteriorate. It could be installed incorrectly. It could work perfectly. I just personally think. If I was a homeowner and I had cladding around my flat, I'd want the cladding off myself. But
yeah, that's a really good point, actually. It's almost like somebody coming around and offered to sort of do a bodge job, isn't it? Rather you think, no, I just want it replaced. So I don't know. I think it'll hinge on whether it gets, I don't think it's got authorizations yet, has it?
I don't know, actually. I don't know. But it's one of those things, is such that. Yeah, it's a nice idea, but I just don't think. I mean, I could be wrong. If people might take to it, but I personally wouldn't be comfortable in having potential, flammable products still stuck to my house if I know there's going to be a fire. Because if there's any problem in it, defect workmanship, then you've got a real issue there. There's no escape.
And it's a good point. And I mean, again, we're just guessing here, aren't we? But using our common sense rather than anything we specifically know about this. And can you imagine in the building controls departments at councils and things them saying, well, let's just try this out. As long as we don't have another fire, well, even if we do have a new fire, it should be fine. Yeah. You know, it's not going to run, is it? I wouldn't have thought. I'd be surprised if it did anyway.
Yeah. Right. We've got plenty of questions. We've got RBF and Jess both asking about Goodwin. I know we talked about the company last week and it's gone rocket. Well, it's gone parabolic this week, hasn't it?
It has, hasn't
very,
it?
Very specialist engineer in lots of sort of secular growth trends, nuclear, defense. He's got also decontamination out in Sellafield as well. What would you do with the shares if you owned them at the moment?
Well, that's a good question, because at around about 150, I think I was saying to people, it'd be crazy not to top slice. And by top slice, I only mean selling 10, 15, 20%, you know, no more than that. So you can run the main position. Well, of course, immediately then news comes out that profit's going to double and they go up another 30, 40%. But you see, when the facts change, you change your mind, don't you? So I looked at it and it's very bad that Goodwin don't put out any market guidance. They don't even put any broker forecasts out. It's not good enough. But I think when you produce a share price like that, that's splitting hairs, really, isn't it? So no, it was a fantastic announcement. They basically said profit is going to double, which I'm sure has delighted even the most passionate of bulls. So, and I just did some back of the envelope figures, and I think it means that because the earnings are doubling. The P is only about 30, which for a company that's doubled its profit and says that the outlook is for further growth, that's not outrageous, you know. Yeah. So you can, because the information's so radically changed, I think you can actually justify this current share price. I mean, it spiked up to about £2.45 yesterday. It's down to, 204. I'm not used to dealing with so many decimal points. It's come off about 20% from the highs. So £201 a share. You can actually justify that. It's about high 20s PE. They've got to start getting proper research out to the market. It's crazy. A 1.5 billion market cap company that says, oh, we don't give guidance. That's our policy. You know, they act like a private company. And when you're 1.5 billion in public, they've got to change their culture, I think, and actually start properly informing the market, because we all should have had a good shot at this. But in fact, only a narrow niche of people who really went in and, you know, did all the really detailed research, which good for them. I'm not criticizing that. But when you're £1.5 billion company, come on, you've got to have some broker research out there.
Yeah.
But fabulous, fabulous business. No, and we've been Amber Green, which is 4 out of 5 stars all this year, about 5 or 6 times. So, and we're staying at that level despite the share price having gone bananas. And Lord Lee actually was raving about this share on my podcast I did with him a few weeks ago, where he just said he sees it as another Rolls Royce, you know, just an exceptional company. So yeah, just main point is well done, and how exciting that we've got a British engineering company that's doing so fantastically well. So yeah, very positive.
Yeah, we got Paul the Parrot saying Goodwin 40 years ago was trading at 21p.
That's right, yes.
And now it's 201 pounds. But even 3 years ago, just over, it was trading at £25. So this is effectively like Nvidia, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I bought some when they're about 3,000 pence. So what's that? £30 a share.
Yeah.
It just went nowhere for the summer, and I got bored with it and sold them. But you see, the trouble was there was nothing to fall back on. There was nothing to value it because they didn't do research. They only rarely put out trading updates. It's a pity. So, and I don't want to fall in love with shares and treat them like a sort of almost like a religion. You know, but there was something I saw today from a guy who bought some 30, 40 years ago and has still got them.
Wow.
Whether it's made up, I don't know. But I suspect it sounded genuine. And apparently his holdings now worth 100 million quid.
That's not bad.
Could be made up. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, we've got Gerald. He's asking about Norcross, which are building products business.
Norcross, that's bathroom fittings, isn't it?
Bathroom fittings. That's, building products, bathroom fittings and stuff. It's got a business in South Africa, but I think it's smaller now than it was, isn't it? Anyway, shares have done okay of late, actually.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, all the legacy problems have been dealt with. Basically, the pension fund sorted or nearly sorted. The South Africa business is only about 10% of group profit, so it doesn't matter too much. You know, and they're winding down one, I think, one of the tile subsidiaries in South Africa that was loss-making. So it's not a bad business, actually, and it's still reasonably priced. So, yeah, I've been pretty bullish on this one for years, actually, but not the obvious amazing bargain it used to be. I would say it has re-rated from a PE of 5 or 6 up to a PE of about 9. But it's basically, and it's done a big acquisition, hasn't it, of this Norwegian, you know, the single panel tiles.
Yeah,
which looks quite a nice acquisition. That's just got regulatory approval. I wouldn't be rushing in to buy Norcross personally at this level, because they just have everything made in China. That's the other thing, you know. I don't, and I do worry a bit about Chinese direct to consumer sales, because I built my own shower cubicle actually using parts I bought off Temu.
Does it work?
It does. It's just a hoop, you know, a metal hoop that I rigged up myself. And then the shower curtains were £1 each, and they're lovely, you know. Right. So I do think this Chinese competition thing is just something to think about.
Good. Okay, brilliant. On the same vein, actually, we got Brian. He's asking about Ultimate Products, which is the Sorter and the, is it the Delray or Belray brands? Came out with a trading update just about. What was your take on this one? Because, again, it's got the, you know, the potential risk of being, you know, impacted by the Chinese imports.
Yeah, it has. I mean, this one I looked at on, I think it was Tuesday again, nearly all these questions are from yesterday's report. I actually thought it looked quite good value. It was, I'm trying to remember, was it results or a trading update? Here we are, I've got it. audited results for July 25, so a little bit historic. They were in line, and it also said current trading is in line with the market expectations. Cavendish slightly, just very slightly, increased the forecast as well. for this year and next year, only 1% to 2%, but it's going in the right direction. It's going to move to AIM from the main market. I got that wrong when I first read it because I assumed it was the other way around. So quite interesting that a company is actually moving from the main market to AIM. So maybe AIM is not dead. It seems to be more for the smaller companies though, AIM now, 50 million market cap. I think this is probably oversold, Ultimate Products. Not the best business in the world, but it is owner managed. Balance sheet's fine. I think it's good value. I think you could maybe see 60 or 70p out of this. No, sorry, 70 or 80p out of it. I think it's a little bit underpriced. Not a bad business. So it showed, I think, for the first time how air fryers had massively boosted its profits over the last 2 or 3 years. And that's now we've gone past peak air fryer. So just so you heard it here first.
Just on that balance sheet, I've got about 14 million of net debt and and 10 million of EBITDA. So it's about 1.4 times EBITDA for effectively a pass-through distributor, really.
Yeah, I've got 1.1 times, so there might be some slight adjustments to that. I took that figure from the company's update. So, yeah, a bit of debt, but it's funding inventories and receivables, basically. So the overall balance sheet is fine. It's 9 million net tangible asset value, I think. Owner managed. I've got a frog in my throat. I remember talking actually to their managing director right at the start, a few months into the pandemic, and he gave me a masterclass on my podcast about how they manage supply chains and the reason why retailers like to have Ultimate Products actually doing the sourcing. And they sell directly online as well. It's not a bad business, I would say, with a bit of upside on the shares, maybe.
Okay, cool. Okay, I know it's not one you normally look at, but we've got base metals. We've got Margaret asking about Acora Resources, which I think does basically royalties of things like copper, cobalt, and I think it does uranium as well. And obviously, it's a really hot area in terms of all things sort of like strategic metals for electrification. Right. I know the copper prices has picked up a lot this year because of the demand, and also I think they've had supply issues with things like Rio Tinto down in I think it's Chile where they do. But the shares have done fabulous. If you've been anywhere near the metals or precious metals, base metals, any type of metal, the shares have done brilliantly this year.
What's the ticker on that one, Paul?
I think it's ECOR.
ECOR. I mean, this is... Oh, yeah, here we are, Ecora. I was putting in Acora, that's why. This is why. One of the reasons I think the AIM indices have outperformed my portfolio. I've actually nearly caught up now, but it's because I don't do anything in the resources sector, just not my area, because I don't know anything about it. But obviously that has been a gap in my portfolio this year because people have done very well on them, and good for them. But this one here, I mean, it's a producer, obviously, isn't it?
I think it buys royalties. It's a royalty stream.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, we've got 1.5% dividend yield and a PE of 14. It's below net tangible asset value. So, yeah, it's an investment type company, but it's not one I've looked at. So I can't really give a view on it, I'm afraid. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think these things are just at the moment, you know, given the trade tensions between China and America, as long as they remain the way, and with work like rare earths and stuff, I actually think there's a really strong bid underneath these, because America is just going to throw billions at making sure that it eventually weans itself off this dependence of China.
At its chart, Paul, it was in a really big downward trend, Ecora was, until April, when it bottomed out at 50p, and it's now almost doubled. So I don't know what's happened. Clearly something positive's happened since April, which ties in with the tariff issues starting, maybe, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, it certainly looks an interesting chart. Was it Elizabeth? She's doubled her money on it by the looks of it in the last 6 months.
She's done rather well.
Yeah.
Okay, good. In the same vein, we've got Stuart. He's asking about Capital, or Capital Drilling, it used to be.
We like this one.
Yeah, I think the Harwood boys like this as well. The shares, I think it does sort of drilling equipment for hiring it out, renting it out. largely for precious metals, gold, I think it is, and for, I think it's a copper they've got. So basically they've got, they used to have a big position, I think, in Africa. They've moved a lot of equipment out to Pakistan, and also they've started a new fleet in America to do, there's a big project, I think it's copper. In, but anyway, the shares have done really well. What's sort of your latest on this one?
We like this. We moved positive on it in June. We moved up from no colour to, because we don't normally touch anything in the resources sector, but we can analyse this because it's an equipment sale and hire business. Very well capitalised, strong balance sheet. I think it's based in Ireland, isn't it? We moved up to Amber Green, which is 4 out of 5 star, on the 19th of June on a contracts update. Multiple new contracts. It's all been good news flow since then. Revenue was up. They announced it, the Q2 revenue was up 22%. Weak H1 trading we got here. That was in August. But the outlook was positive. Yeah, says margins are bottomed out and good pipeline. So it sounds... We like it. We went back up to Amber Green on 16th of October. Looks interesting. Well-funded, 10 times PE. Looks like it's sort of the bottom of the cycle and starting to improve. So, yeah, definitely. I don't know much about it, but from the analysis we've done of the numbers, we think this looks worth a closer look. So, yeah, people can have a look at that and maybe give us a bit more detail back.
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, it's got these, you know, strong secular trends. If gold price keeps going up, it's going to do well. Plus which it has been, the copper price continues to. Well, it means that these projects are going to be, you know, well funded. Yeah. My only thing I would take if I owned it would be, you've probably got quite a lot of project risk in terms of you know, a lot of their revenue goes through from certain one big mine or one mine location and probably one customer risk as well.
Good point.
One or two. So that would be the only two sort of points I would make. But I think at the moment it's make hay while the sun shines in that one.
It seems to be that way. I think this might be the one where there was a gap, wasn't there? The current year was, you know, a big project had ended and a new one was limbering up. So that could be a nice catalyst actually for earnings growth. As you say, though, assuming the new contract doesn't go wrong in any way. So, yeah, we're not experts at all, me and my team, on drilling or mining or resources. But just on the basic numbers, this looks quite promising. And, of course, always lovely to see the Harwood boys in there. I know we keep going on about them, but they're very effective. They're very effective at getting things done, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, right. I think they own this one as well. We've got Martin. He's asking about React Group, which I think is a facilities management or facilities type of business. It's got the cleaning of buildings. It's got window cleaning and it's got sort of emergency plumbing interest. The shares are really cheap, actually, but came out with a trading update this week, did it?
Yeah, we like this. This was on Tuesday as well, yesterday. We upped it actually from Amber to Amber Green. My colleague Dave wrote up a section on it. Yeah, it's specialist cleaning businesses, which sounds boring, but actually they're claiming 85% of it is recurring revenue. So specialised, quite obviously, sometimes quite dangerous cleaning that, you know, has to be done. And the key thing we liked about it, actually, is that the broker, it was ahead of expectations. They were about 10% ahead on EBITDA. That was for the full year to ending September. And the brokers have upgraded forecasts between 2 and 5%. So that's helpful. Weak balance sheet. But I think when you start to see companies outperform and you get ahead of expectations updates, the weaker balance sheet kind of diminishes in importance. We think there's recovery upside on this potentially. It's a sort of buy and build, isn't it, where they were in this kind of vicious circle where their equity got sold off heavily and was very, very cheap, so they couldn't raise fresh equity to do more deals. So it was chicken and egg. In the end, they got a more chunky bank facility, I think, from HSBC, which enabled them to do another fairly big acquisition, which so far, touch wood, seems to be going all right. How many people will get excited by the story, though? Cleaners? I don't know. But some of this stuff's not bad margin, actually, you know, Paul.
You're right. I was just looking at 13% EBIT margins. I was surprised. I was very surprised.
It's better than you might think if I just said the words cleaning company.
You're right, yeah. I mean, I would just say, how good is it passing those input costs? You know, we've obviously gone through increased NI, and minimum wage, because obviously they won't be paying their employees top dollar, I wouldn't have thought, not for doing the sort of cleaning
But how good are they at being able to pass those through on the price, on their contract pricing, and how competitive it is? But
it's a good question. But the fact that they've just put out yesterday and ahead of expectations, trading EBITDA, says that they're coping fine, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, okay, good. We've got Dan. He's asking about. We talked about it very briefly last week. It was Hargreaves Services. I think they basically came out with an AGM trading update today, saying
today.
It was all systems go.
I was a bit perplexed by this. I didn't look at it myself, so I'm winging it a bit on this one. But I did notice it dropped 8 or 9%. The share price did a mid-morning, and I said to the team, "Look, what do we know what's going on here?" Because our notes here, I found it. This is an AGM statement to the end of September. They said all three business units at Hargreaves Services are performing in line with expectations, which makes it strange that the shares were down 8%. But by lunchtime, they'd recovered and they were down 3%. So not quite sure what caused that spike. We can't find any broker updates either. And it says it's confident it can deliver in line for the full year. This is a niche engineering services and also land development, isn't it?
Yes.
And they've just completed a land sale for 11.5 million. So that's about 5% of the market cap. It's got a strong balance sheet with net cash and good asset backing. And you've got a 5% yield. So, and Cavendish reckoned £9.30 some of the parts. So maybe interesting, more for special situations and income investors, possibly. Mm. I don't have a strong view either way, Paul. Do you?
I think their services business is going great guns, actually, because I think it's got big contracts with HS2, Sizewell C. And I know I spoke to the Harwood guys who are in this one, and they mentioned that they're in a very excellent position for the new reservoirs that are being built, which would be a huge amount. There's one massive one in Abingdon, I think, planned, the first one ever in the UK. So I think that, like all the big civil contractors, I think they're in a good position in that respect.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting space. I mean, in the past, I've tended to dismiss civil contractors as just low margin, risky businesses. But there have been fairly big changes in the sector, haven't there, over the last few years, where they have been improving their operating margins and improving their contract terms to remove a lot of the risk. So, yeah, I was a bit slow on the uptake on that, but it could be interesting, yeah.
Okay, good. Let's move sectors. We've got George. He's asking about Seeing Machines, which I think he does. These do sort of like driver assistance monitors that help alert drivers. If you're nodding off, then it will wake you up with a little alarm. So
that's
it improves safety of journeys. And it goes into not only vehicles, cars, but lorries, probably trains, anything where you need a driver, etc. It's going to be useful. They came out with a thing to deal, I think, today, I believe, on with their a Japanese OEM, is a car manufacturer or some sort of manufacturer anyway.
Yeah, it's not an actual contract, is it? It's they're saying a formal contract award during H1 next year. We couldn't really glean enough from this update today to really add any points. The bare side of it is that Seeing Machines has an absolutely terrible history of missing forecasts and repeated fundraisers, always jam tomorrow. The upside case on it, which I'm actually persuaded by moderately, is that EU legislation is requiring the fitment of this, and Seeing Machines is about one of only three credible players in the whole global market. What they're saying is the royalty stream from new car production in Europe kind of pretty much from now is kicking in, and should see a sort of hockey stick graph and a move into profit. But we've been promised this before. So you, for me personally, I'm not in the shares at the moment. I bought them when they were about 2p and lobbed them out at about 3p just as a trade. So, but I'm certainly watching it with interest. It'll be, this. And if you then get legislation in America and other countries as well, you could obviously, Seeing Machines could do very well. So, it's one of those more speculative shares where I'm moderately positive, but quite nervous about it at the same time, you know?
Yeah. I would have expected them to have announced more deals, actually, in terms of OEMs for the European angle, because all the manufacturers would have had to have sorted out this technology they're driving. They've either done it in-house or using somebody else. We just don't know publicly who it is.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah.
There's going to be competition. And then the other thing I would add is that, you know, in London, we all know
that Waymo are now starting to do autonomous vehicles as taxis, robo-taxis from San Francisco.
Oh,
they started in London now. So that's that in 5 years' time, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be moving because everybody's doing it in San Francisco. I just think the cost curve is going to come down, the availability of these stuff. So will we need driver assistance?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, it does feel like it's got a finite life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's taken so bloody long for them to actually gain commercial traction. You're talking about 20 years or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the window might be sort of shrinking, mightn't it? So, yeah, tricky one.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, AI is going to be perfect for autonomous vehicles because the speed of being able to look at conditions. But anyway, yeah, I think that's only going to get better. We've got let's move sectors. We've got Vicky asking about Foxtons, the London estate agent. Is it basically does lettings and sales? Not surprisingly, talking about a slowdown heading into the budget. But what was your take?
This is very similar to what we were talking about before. A fundamentally good business where the recent sell-off on obvious short-term factors like the budget, I think is more of a buying opportunity than a threat. So, yeah, I like this. I don't have any myself, but I think you probably wouldn't go far wrong picking up a few of these around 50p, tucking them away. And because the nice thing about it is that the actual impact on Foxtons of the London sales market apparently is just frozen. So that's obviously going to hurt their numbers. But we all know that it's a known factor. It's in the price, but they've heavily grown the lettings side of it, which is more like an annuity business. Really, that's been the focus of Foxton's growth. So it's quite well cushioned, I think, from a housing downturn. You're not likely to see heavy losses like I think it happened previously. So no, I think on balance of risk reward, it's about 57p, isn't it, Foxtons? I think it's pretty good, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, as a curveball for the budget, I can see the, you know, Rachel Reeves reducing stamp duty, not increasing it, and then arguing such that we will then recalibrate the valuations for council tax on houses.
Yes.
You know, and she'll do it that because you want to take out as much friction costs when it comes
to
allowing people to buy houses. And when you're in London, I mean, you get a shoebox for £500,000?
And that's
a lot of stamp duty. It's 20, 30 grand or whatever it is.
Oh, so it was George Osborne who brought that in. He just killed the London market stone dead. You know, typical thing where right at the wrong point in the cycle, he brought in those really punitive stamp duty. And why should people be paying six figures to the government just for moving a house?
Yeah.
It's totally wrong. So I personally think, a 0.5% of the property value in council tax would make a lot more sense than these bans. But of course, it would hit people in big houses and people with expensive houses in London, wouldn't it? So it'll be interesting what she comes up with for sure.
Yeah, I think if you want to get to growth, you've got to get the housing market and you've got to do two sides of it. It's supply, clearly.
Yes.
You know, the building safety regulation and, you know, stopping the delays and planning and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But also you've got to boost demand. You need to replace the Help to Buy. You need to get people excited about wanting to buy a house. And if you've got 8%, you know, basically stamp duty, I mean, that's
it's crazy.
It's nuts. Absolutely
it is.
Nuts.
It is. Know.
But anyway, that'd be my take.
And I think you could argue that governments were collecting more in other in other taxes. You'll have a surge in VAT from estate agents' fees, but also from home improvements. You know, other areas of the economy will. So if you look at it in the whole, the current setup is very harmful, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and if I'm even remotely right, Foxtons will do very well out of it.
Yeah, I think they will. So yeah, I think it could be a good time to look at Foxtons shares. But obviously, we're not recommending anything.
Yeah,
I'm
just
saying have a look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We've got Jonas. He's asking about Bloomsbury, which is basically the consumer, academic and professional publishing business. It's got Sarah J. Maas as an author, and it's also got Harry Potter, I think, and got this, I think about a third of the business is essentially academic and publishing, which is still quite tough, actually, with AI. What was your take? The shares have been quite weak, obviously, from the share chart of late.
Yeah, it bounced quite significantly a few days ago, didn't it? 23rd of October. on H1 results, full year profit will be ahead of expectations. You don't hear that very often at the moment, do you? So yeah, it was a good update. I should declare I hold a position in these. I've held them for a while now. I think it's a really good business, owner managed, long-term founder, owner manager running it, doing a really good job. Valuation metrics look attractive, balance sheet's good. I think everything to play for with Bloomsbury. I think it's even though we've had a little bounce recently, I think it's fully justified, and you could see the start maybe of a new uptrend, fingers crossed. So yeah, it's worth people having a look at it.
Yeah, they inked that deal, didn't they, with selling some of the licensed out some of their reading material, their academic reading material, to AI, to one of the larger language models. I think it was a sort of like which is obviously going to be helpful. There's no doubt about it. I would say I think a lot of their academic publishing is to universities and students and stuff.
Yeah,
both sides, and I suspect, like Chegg, which happened in the States, it got impacted by AI. I think ultimately, you know, there's going to be AI is just, I've said this before, I'm a subscriber of ChatGPT, and it's absolutely fabulous for research. It really is. I know it might not get specifics within this because obviously they're locked sort of like walled gardens, but I think it will give you 80% of what you need, and whether you need to pay an expensive subscription to get the extra 20%, I think there'll be a number of people who will decide not to do it.
Okay, interesting. I mean, I personally find I've played around a fair bit with AI. I found it minimal use to me personally. And I find with these AI-generated news summaries, for example, in the shares world, they're often fooled by PRs, and you know, they don't join up the information with research notes. So I find all the AI summaries that people send me usually have one or two errors in them, and that an experienced human like you or I can actually see through things that AI can't. So for me, very limited use. I use it personally as a kind of glorified search engine, really. But I don't know, maybe I'm missing a trick.
Well, yeah, I think you probably need to have a really deep dive on it. I mean, I'm just giving you an indication that I now, you know, I'm focusing on just the providers that I want. So I want to basically continue paying for your service, but I've stopped Investors Chronicle just because of that, because they don't give me much anything else above what I can get as a publication, and I'll probably stop Stockopedia as well, to be perfectly honest, because
I couldn't possibly comment.
Yeah. But anyway, so but there'll be more people like me making those choices, because you know, I'm paying $25 a month for OpenAI, and you just move your budget to where you think is most effective. But anyway, that's my take.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I played around with them, but it hasn't. The trouble is, I asked it for a share price for a share that was suspended, and what the share price was on a certain date, and it told me 60p, and I looked it up, and it was actually 32p. Right. You know, so if I have to check it anyway, it's not much use to me. But you should do a tutorial, Paul, to teach us all how to use it properly. Oh, you probably don't want to educate the competition, though.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what I did the other day. Right, I asked ChatGPT to create a spreadsheet of all UK fully listed and AIM listed software companies, do the EBITDA multiple, do the market cap, and it came back. I had to back and forth it, just giving instructions, but I didn't do anything. It just created a table for me straight out into Excel, and 80% of it was correct. And all I needed to do, all the descriptions were fine, all the tickers were fine, all the companies were fine. Some of the calculations were a bit weird, so I had to do those myself. But it basically took a lot of the heavy lifting straight off me, and it did it for me. So,
sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. Last question. We've got Henry, quick one on Creo Medical, which basically does these electrosurgical devices. It's got basically, you know, really clever sort of these medical devices which go on to that is trying to grow. And it's also got sort of 51% of a medical device distribution company that it sold the other 49% to a Chinese partner. It's got plenty of cash, well funded. What's your view on it? It's just the latest view.
Too difficult, Trey, for this I haven't really got any insights on it, Paul. We do cover it on my Substack. We all, every update from it, we mention it, but it's very difficult to value the show. Oh, they've come off a lot, haven't they?
Yeah,
11p. I mean, the lead product sounds great, doesn't it? This is the speedboat thing, isn't it?
Speedboat, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, but it's basically from a standing start. Most of the revenue is the legacy business. Mm. So I don't know. And it sounds, you know, if you want, you know, it's one of the things where I'd maybe buy about a basket of about 10 of these speculative things, like Light Sciences Group. I'd probably put some Korea Medical in there. You know, I just treat it as a bit of a lottery ticket, really, at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd say, Henry, I actually spoke to the management team about 2 months ago, okay? And I said to them, look, to get this business into the sort of crosshairs of investors, we need to increase the sales materially, but just as important, reduce the break-even point, because it's currently burning through about 7 or 8 million of cash every single year. Now, it can fund those over 3 or 4 years, but it didn't become profitable at the moment on its cost base until about 2028, 2029. Yeah,
it's just not interesting, is it?
Well, I said to him, look, is there an opportunity here, to absolutely take a knife to the cost base and outsource a lot of it and to do a step change on it? And then you'll see it break even at sort of like 6 million or 10 million rather than 20 million, which is 1-2. And he didn't say, we're looking into it. But he basically said, look, okay, that's something we are seriously, you know, thorough considering. So they could change the makeup of this business, which would certainly move the dial in terms of when it was profitable, bring it nearer term, and having that scalability. And if they can do that and outsource it, then I think it'll be totally different. But at the moment, I'm with Paul, to be honest, brutal. It's too loss making for too long, and the cost base is too heavy.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm afraid what happens, you know, we've been in the small caps markets now, but in about 30 odd years. And you see cycles, don't you, where when everybody's bullish, you get a lot of these blue sky jam tomorrow type companies floated on the assumption that they can just raise more cash whenever they need it. Then you go into a savage, you know, two, three year bear market where they can't raise any more cash and everybody's lost interest in blue sky stuff. So I think we need to really not have more of these speculative zero revenue. I know it's now does have some revenue, but I think we need to just say to brokers, can you just please stop bloating jam tomorrow speculative stuff? The stock market is not the right place for them. The stock market is a place for mature, you know, businesses that are profitable and whatever. So it's very tough for these companies once they've floated and the fizz has gone off and the shares have collapsed. What do they do next? It's very tricky for them.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we've been going now for just over 70 minutes. Thanks, everyone, for your excellent questions. Again, thanks for your insights there, Paul. And look forward in repeating the show this same place, same time next week. So thanks again, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Enjoyed it.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.